This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Fendi. On this segment of Your Legal Rights, we're going to have a debate of California ballot Proposition 57 on the November 8th ballot. It's entitled a couple of different ways, the Public Safety and Rehabilitation Act of 2016. The official title is Criminal Sentences, Parole, Juvenile Criminal Proceedings and Sentencing, Initiative Constitutional Amendment and Statute. My guests are Stephen Wagstaff, President of the California District Attorneys Association and District Attorney for San Mateo County, Jeffrey Hayden, Chair of the California Board of Legal Specialization and a specialist in criminal law, and California Superior Court Judge Eugene Hyman, retired. Eugene spent 5 years being a judge in the juvenile court, and we'll talk about that in a few minutes. What I'd like to do is just give you a little brief kind of summary that the California Legislative Analyst Office began its analysis of Prop 57. And here it is, very short. A vote yes on this measure means certain state prison inmates convicted of nonviolent felony offenses would be considered for release earlier than otherwise. The state prison system could award additional sentencing credits to inmates for good behavior and approved rehabilitative or educational achievements. Youths must have a hearing in juvenile court before they could be transferred to adult court. Now, the no vote on this measure, according to the legislative office, is there would be no change to the inmate release process. The state's prison system could not award additional sentencing credits to inmates. Certain youths could continue to be tried in adult court without a hearing in juvenile court. This segment of Your Legal Rights is made possible by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar, which certifies specialization in 11 fields of law. We will start with Jeff Hayden, who will do a brief summary of why he is in favor of this.
First, I should speak and mention that I am here. I don't speak for the Board of Legal Specialization or the State Bar. The views I'm expressing are strictly my own. I've been practicing in this area for quite a number of years, and I'm actually in favor of both parts of this initiative, much more concerned with the juvenile portion and the adult portion. Juvenile, since Proposition 21 passed in the year 2000, it gives prosecutors discretion to send most juveniles that are charged with a felony to adult court. It has very different applications in different parts of the state. It also has certain offenses that are mandated to be filed directly in adult court. The other portion of it is one that looks at the time that somebody has served a sentence and participated in rehabilitative programs. It lets the Department of Corrections determine if they may be appropriate for parole after they have served their sentence on the principal charge that they've been sentenced for, the longest term therein, not including any enhancements or special allegations. So if somebody was charged with a crime that perhaps carried 4 years, 5 years in state prison, but it was enhanced by certain conduct, they displayed a weapon to scare people. Not actually talking about shooting people, but displayed a weapon or things of that nature.
Or a knife, would that be included?
Presumably, it would include a knife. Mm-hmm. Presumably, it would include if they were motivated by the person's ethnicity. Things that are done as enhancements and not as substantive charges, they could consider them for parole if they're appropriate for it at that earlier stage, whereas right now they don't have that level of discretion. Mm-hmm. And what it really does more than anything else is it shifts that determination to be made at a later date, based on how they've been performing in prison, based on whether they're truly appearing to be rehabilitated, whether they're participating in programming, as opposed to exclusively being made at the time when they're initially sentenced.
Jeff, you have practiced criminal law in the defense area for approximately how many years?
Well, let's see. When I first started, tablets were referring to the things that you carried around and not.
Well, that was from the mountain. That was from the mountain.
That's right. That's right. No, I've been doing this for, 26 years now.
So let me ask you this. With respect to your assessment and all of your experience as a criminal defense attorney, how do you feel about this proposition? Do you feel that this is going to be a benefit to the average, let's say, person in California? to our overall population?
Overall, it has the potential to save us an awful lot of money. But it also has there's one reality that nobody speaks of, and that is we are still being supervised. Our prison system is still being overseen by a 3-judge panel. They have ordered us to reduce the prison population. It's been overcrowded for a number of years. We've already taken major steps towards bringing it down. We're not quite there. We've already grabbed and taken care of all the low-hanging fruit. Now we're having to make some really difficult choices as to who gets released, and those choices will be made for us if we don't do it. So what it appears to me that the governor is trying to do here is to try and put together a mechanism to make a decision as to who gets out so that we do it instead of passing it on to a panel of judges who aren't necessarily beholden to California taxpayers or California citizens. They are federal judges. They have a lifetime appointment. They're not in the state system. They may not have the same background as those of us that work in the justice system, and they may have some different orientation. This is trying to say we'll prioritize. We'll do it, but we'll prioritize who it is. And we're not going to do it based solely on what was decided at the time they went in. That's obviously a major factor, but we're going to look at these other factors. What were they sent there for? It only applies to nonviolent felons.
Okay.
Unfortunately, there's a real strong vacuum as far as what a nonviolent felon means.
Let me get Steve's response, and then we'll talk about what is violent versus nonviolent. Steve, would you respond? You are against this.
Yes, I'm very fervently against it, and not because of the direct file of juveniles portion. That's one that DAs around the state, as our association, that wouldn't have been our battle. If the original initiative was only to deal with the juvenile part, that would have been a different story. When it was added on to suddenly say, no, we're going to create a new system for releasing people from prison, where it isn't what the judge says, instead we'll give it elsewhere, well, that's taking us backwards. I am now in my 40th year as a prosecutor, and I remember when it was under the old system back in the 70s where people would be sent to prison. We didn't know when they would get out. The victims had no rights to comment or have notice at all. This takes us back to that. You know, every initiative, and there have been a lot of criminal justice initiatives in recent years, and every single one of them is done by the proponents of it with an effort toward justice, as they believe, the right thing happening to the people who've committed the crimes. Every one, whether I agreed with them or not, they were all that way. This one, by what the governor himself has said, is that this has nothing to do with how long somebody ought to serve. Instead, it has to do entirely with the governor wants to create, by his words, a sustainable system to deal with the overcrowding in prison. Our Constitution already has that. The governor has the power to commute sentences. He can do that. But that's a political choice that he wants to avoid. So instead what this did, and that's one of my big gripes about it, what this proposition does is say it won't be done in open court. It won't be with a judge making a decision. It won't be done with a parole board, such as we have done for years, for the last almost 40 years, a parole board that the prosecutors and victims have a right to attend. Instead, it will be done by a bureaucratic process inside the prisons where there's no requirement for notice to the victims or prosecutors, to family members. When we tell a victim, it's just going back to the dark ages of the 70s, where when a victim is told, you know what, the judge just sentenced your abuser to 15 years in prison. He will not be on the street. You have safety for at least the next, could be 7, 8, 10 years. You are safe. Now we have to say, we don't know what will happen. We can't tell you when the person's going
to
get out.
So, Steve, if I may come back to something you said just a few minutes ago. With respect to a crime victim, under our current system right now, does a crime victim have the right to have some say as to whether or not someone is going to be paroled?
Under those cases which now are available for parole, where a parole board is deciding when somebody gets out, absolutely have a right under Marcy's law. And before that, have a full right not only to get notice of it, but to be present at a parole hearing if they choose to be that.
But under 57, if that passes, that no longer is the case?
There is nothing in 57 that gives any right to prosecutors or victims to do it. That's why it's a constitutional amendment, not a statutory amendment, because this one overrides the Victim's Bill of Rights, Marcy's. It does that in others. It overrides the three strikes law.
Okay.
And so that's the problem with it. It is doing that. And there's another way to accomplish the goal that the governor says. And we told that to the governor. My organization said to the governor, "Governor, work with us." When he gave us his proposal at the beginning of the year, "Work with us. We can achieve this end where we don't have that," whereas what we're going to talk in a few minutes, where we can have violent cases where people can get the benefit of this. Don't do it. Let's work together. And he declined. He simply said, "We're going forward."
Jeff, you wanted to respond.
I do. My friend Mr. Wagstaff speaks in terms of certainty as though we know exactly how this is going to be upheld. And if you read this, it's a very, very short provision. If you read the five paragraphs that are being added to the state constitution by this article, these are not concrete. They are not procedures. They are statements of policy and nothing more. The procedural mechanism is going to be determined by the governor and the Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. And they can change from time to time to adapt. But the reason for this is quite clearly stated at the very beginning. It is to avoid the release of prisoners by federal court order. And that's where this is going. Now, exactly how they will reach these policies is yet to be said. There is obviously room for courts to be involved, and I guarantee you the state Supreme Court will be determining what some of the terms in the statute mean. But for now, understand, people are going to be getting out. We are going to have to release a certain number of people. We're not finished. It's something that the courts have mandated. If we don't determine a way to do it and maximize protecting the public in the way that we determine who's getting out, then the courts are going to let them out based on other criteria that are more concrete. How long they've been in, who's up for parole, things that may be outside of the statute. We want to look at who's safe to release today, not what it looked like when they were put in prison 20 years ago.
But, Jeff, in terms of how Steve has just told us that if this passes, a crime victim will not get any notice, will not have any standing to be able to say, "No, I don't want this person to get out," et cetera, et cetera. How do you respond to that?
Well, what Steve just said, I agree with in the sense that it's not spelled out in this constitutional amendment. Again, the procedures haven't been set forth, and there's nothing specific in terms of operating regulations, much less statutes. It's just strictly the amendment to the Constitution. We want to be the ones to determine who get out.
All right. I'd like you to do this because we're then going to turn to the juvenile provisions of Prop 57 in just a couple of minutes. But there seems to be some dispute as to whether or not this statute deals with violent versus nonviolent crimes. Could you, Steve, could you respond to that?
Yes.
How does the average person who's not a lawyer, and especially not a criminal lawyer, understand what this really means?
Well, because to the average person, they sit there and think violent. Violent would mean what it means in Webster's Dictionary.
Yeah.
And the reality is California has a statute in its penal code that sets forth, here are violent crimes. And that's how we work on in sentencing. There's also a long list of what we call serious crimes. And the crimes that are not violent in the penal code are crimes such as human trafficking, rape of an unconscious person, the whole Brock Turner thing of the intoxicated drunk person. They are not violent crimes as defined in the California Penal Code. Mm-hmm. There is domestic violence. There is felony threats. The list is 8 pages long. We've created a list at the DA's decision of 8 pages of felonies that do not qualify under the California Penal Code as violent offenses. Now, and we know it's not, nobody's fighting us on this, that they agree that that's a gap here. It is a gap here. Lewd act with a 14 or 15-year-old child. Those do not get defined as violent under California law.
So what, taking that into account, what does that mean with regard to 57 if it is passed?
Our belief is that if 57 passes, that people will have the right to ask for relief under this, to get relief under this, who've committed crimes that you and I would clearly think of as a common sense level, and that would be domestic violence, rape of intoxicated. And that's the problem with it. And that decision is when one can say it's vague, but read the stat, read exactly what's here. It talks about violent. It's pretty straightforward.
Jeff, brief response, and then let's get to juvenile provision.
If there's one arena where Steve and I agree, read this initiative. It's very short. There's only a few very short paragraphs that spell out what it means. But the question that we don't know the answer to is what it means by violent felony. There is a term of art, violent felony.
Yes.
And it covers almost all the acts under the three strikes law. There's a couple different charges that would only be considered serious and not violent, but almost all of those are violent felonies. When Steve was speaking, he is speaking with the presumption that when it says a nonviolent felony offense, they're saying not one of those violent felonies listed in the three strikes law, whereas others have interpreted it, as I do, to mean an offense that does not – that is not violent, and using a term violent as anybody else would that was listening to it. And it's not clear the way this is written what they intend. There is an issue with the way it's punctuated. Nonviolent is hyphenated. I won't get into the technicalities.
We need an English professor to help us on this.
We really do, but I think we'll get that from the Supreme Court. We have a couple law professors on it now. We've got people that will dissect it. But ultimately, the one thing, though, this doesn't say these people get released. What it says is that they could be considered after a certain period of time.
Okay.
So this isn't actually cutting anybody loose. It's saying these are the people that you can look to. You can look to this list of people.
Steve.
To conclude this before we move on, I think it's very important to recognize when we did realignment, because our population in the prison was up close to 180,000 people. It's now under 130. We are under the mandate of the three-judge panel. What they're concerned about is that if the population goes up. However, when we did realignment in 2011, it was very clear exactly who it applied to.
Mm-hmm.
Prop 47, it's very clear in its word to it applied to.
47.
Prop 47, okay. It was very clear when it came down 2 years ago who it applied to. 57 is not. Mm-hmm. That's bad drafting, and I know Jeff agrees with me in this. He could have written this a whole way that would have made it very, very clear. This one's not, and it's asking the public to take a gamble that it'll be read the right way.
Let me let you all know, this is Your Legal Rights, and we're talking about this. Is a, in case you didn't know, this is a debate of California Proposition 57, which is on the November 8th ballot. My guests are, and we're going to hear from him in just a moment, California Superior Court Judge Eugene Hyman, retired. Jeff Hayden, Chair of the California Board of Legal Specialization. He's a specialist in criminal law. He is not speaking on behalf of the State Bar of California or the California Board of Legal Specialization. And Steve Wagstaff, President of the California District Attorneys Association, District Attorney for San Mateo County. Jeff, would you do this? Briefly summarize the juvenile provisions of this, because it's my understanding, and then we can hear from Judge Hyman, Eugene Hyman. What I understand is the three of you agree on the language in 57 regarding juveniles. Summarize it briefly for us, would you, Jeff?
After the voters passed Proposition 21 back in the year 2000, we could have young people that are accused of a crime and they're going to go to adult court. Some, because the law mandates it, nobody has discretion to file in juvenile court. A much greater list gives prosecutorial discretion. That means a prosecutor anywhere in the state can decide, I want kids charged with this crime to go to adult court. And the rest would have to go through juvenile court, but it's a fairly small list. Most cases where a juvenile could be sent to adult court, the prosecutor has discretion before they really know anything about the facts of the case. When they first get their initial discovery from the police, they make that determination, and it goes to adult. Sometimes it's the wrong call, and there is no provision in the law for it coming back until after conviction. A judge can look at it and say none of those qualifying offenses were proven. Otherwise, there's no coming back. What this does is it restores where we were before 2000, to where if the prosecutor thinks it's an appropriate case to file in adult court, which really looks to whether this young person is amenable to the treatment of the juvenile court. They file a motion in the juvenile court along with the initial case, and the judge can't decide guilt or innocence or make these determinations until they first reach the threshold issue, whether this young person stays in juvenile court or goes to adult. And they look at the circumstances of the offense and the minor themselves, what they've done in the past, how likely their prospects are to be turned around. And this restores that so that there's some balance from the judiciary mm-hmm. to decide whether this person should be kept in juvenile court or sent on to adult.
As opposed to the prosecutor making that decision.
Right. And you have people as young as 14 years old that were sent to adult court where later perhaps it didn't appear as egregious as it first came in, but right now under the current state of the law, the prosecutors are in a position where they have to make that determination very, very early before all the facts are fleshed out. Whereas in a scenario such as this statute proposes, we know much, much, much more about the case before that decision is finally made.
Let me turn to Judge Eugene Hyman. Eugene, you sat on the juvenile court for 5 years in Santa Clara County. You've been a Superior Court judge for about 20 years.
Yes.
How do you feel about the provisions of the regarding juveniles in Prop 57?
I favor it, and the reason why I favor it is that I served before Proposition 21 and post Proposition 21, and I've seen what I consider to be a lot of abuses. I'm a big believer in checks and balances. That's what our system was set up. I have great respect for the executive branch of government, which is the prosecutor, in terms of them having discretion in terms of a lot of things that they've done. I think I can't remember exactly how many hearings I held in juvenile with respect to fitness, that is, whether a juvenile should be kept in juvenile or go to adult. But my recollection is that I did not disagree with the prosecutor in any of those cases. That is, in every of those cases, the person went to adult court. Mm-hmm. They were serious cases, and the person had serious histories and things of that nature, and I thought it was appropriate for them to be held accountable. Under Prop 21 that passed in 2000, which was a proposition, it gave the executive branch with the prosecutor great discretion, and it also mandated for the first time that 14-year-olds in certain situations were eligible to be filed in adult court, and in certain cases mandated that there be filings for 14, 15, 16, and 17-year-olds. I think that there's 58 prosecutors' offices.
For each county in California.
Each county has one. Right. And there's 58 different ways of looking at it. Justice is very local in many ways, and this is an example. San Mateo County rarely files a case directly in adult court, whereas Santa Clara County, in a study that I read, files a great deal proportionate to their population.
In the adult court.
In the adult court. So, and then on top of that, you have considerations for race and other kinds of concerns. What could happen, hypothetically, because prosecutors have to act very quickly under 21, they have 48 hours to decide whether they're going to direct file or to go traditionally through juvenile. So they have to make a quick decision. But if they file it, they could hypothetically dismiss it and file it in juvenile. Mm-hmm. I've never heard of that happening.
Yeah.
And with respect to a judge sending a case back, it's very limited in terms of those circumstances where it could. And I've never heard of that happening, although it's possible, depending upon the outcome of a case where, depending upon what the person's convicted of, that could happen. As I said, I believe in checks and balances. And under the Prop 21 situation, there are no checks and balances. Mm-hmm. The prosecutor has the power to make this decision, and the judge doesn't have a say. And I just don't think that's the way to go about it.
Let me throw something out to you. It's my understanding that the three of you are in favor of the provisions involving juveniles in Prop 57.
I am.
Yeah.
And
Jeff,
so.
You are.
Well, let me speak. I'm speaking as the San Mateo County District Attorney when I say that.
Yeah.
And I'm perfectly satisfied with that provision.
How about the president of the California Department?
There is a division of views among district attorneys in the state, and therefore the association on that mm-hmm. doesn't have a formal position on that alone. All I can say is that if the original Proposition 57, which was only the juvenile part, I wouldn't be here with you today. I wouldn't be sitting here fighting it, and I think that's true of what I would say the majority of district attorneys mm-hmm. in this state. Mm-hmm. That's not where our battle is. But, yes, I think what Judge Hyman just said truly summarizes what's there. We use it very seldom. In our county, San Mateo County, a decision to direct file on a juvenile cannot be made without the approval of either myself or my chief deputy. We want to be so cautious about how we use it because we know what it means. And, Judge, I can tell you there was one occasion in our county several years ago, where there was a case the defense attorney brought us information after we had done a direct file. And we did exactly what you said.
Oh, you dismissed it?
Dismissed and went back to juvenile court. Huh?
Where we thought it belonged.
You're the only one that's done it that I've ever heard of.
There may be others, but that was one we felt justice called for.
Unfortunately, I had one of the other minors in the case who stayed in adult when the other two went to juvenile.
In that case. Well, how does we have for the statewide version, which is the first half hour, we have about a minute and a half or so left. How does the average person, the average voter, deal with something like this where you may have something? Yeah, where you may have something very positive for juveniles,
exactly.
Not good with regard to adults. Judge Hyman, please.
I was telling Steve before we started the show that I was extremely conflicted because I feel very strongly about the juvenile part of it. But I agree with him 100% with respect to his concerns with respect to the adult part of it, because basically the proposition is asking us to take on good faith in terms of what the outcome is going to be. Not only that, because it's administrative rulemaking, which is fluid, the fact that this governor does it this way doesn't mean that another governor is going to do it exactly the same way. I mean, I agree
Why?
Well, because they have discretion. In terms of who they appoint, they have discretion in terms of how they administratively, and the courts defer to administrative rulemaking in so many ways, not just with criminal, with respect to workers' compensation, with respect to unemployment. There's a lot of different things. So this is very dangerous, but I feel so strongly about the juvenile provision that I'm leaning personally in terms of voting in favor of it.
Are you? Okay. We're just about out of time. Steve, very briefly,
one real
20 seconds.
We met with Scott Budnick, who is the author of the juvenile part of this, at our DA's conference in June, and we told him that if this fails, that we'll work with him. So the concerns that people have, such as you just mentioned, perhaps we can alleviate those by going to the legislature as DAs to say, let's work on changing things.
All right, everybody. This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. We are doing a debate on California Proposition 57, which is on the November 8th ballot. It has two titles. One is the Public Safety and Rehabilitation Act of 2016. The other one is much longer. It involves both adult prisoners. It involves juveniles. And what I want to do is give you an opportunity to call in, ask a question, make a comment if you like. We have a toll-free number, 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. Please feel free to call in with your question, your comment. That's what makes this program, I think, worthwhile for you who are listening. Before we take any calls, let me just mention a couple of things that came up, and this will be very brief. Last week, we did a program on disability-related discrimination issues in the workplace. And one of the listeners by the name of Tom called in. He's a computer programmer who has some very serious sight problems. And he wondered, what can I do? He's in the Silicon Valley. What can I do? I'm having this problem with doing my work on my computer. And my guests were here to try to give Tom some direction of what he might do since he was visually impaired. And there are some people who are totally blind, computer people, I have learned. Another listener who sent me an email said the following, so I hope Tom is listening. For a Windows computer, Zoom Text, Z-O-O-M Text is the software program that this listener uses. And she says that she has been legally blind due to juvenile macular degeneration, but she's also a computer programmer. She also mentioned that if you use a Mac or an iPhone, VoiceOver comes standard and will read all text to you, and there's a built-in Zoom feature. And she also said, Tom, if you're listening, get hooked up with the Department of Rehabilitation in your area of California. So I hope for those of you who are visually impaired that this is something that is of help to you. For those of you in the San Francisco Bay Area, the San Mateo County Law Library will have a free noontime lecture next Thursday, October 20th at noon on how to clean your criminal record, which goes with what we're talking about here. Attorney Christopher Morales, who's a certified specialist in criminal law, will discuss various ways to clean up a criminal record, including even how to obtain a certificate of rehabilitation and the steps necessary to apply for a pardon from the governor or the president. And you're invited to attend this free lecture at the Law Library. It's at 710 Hamilton Street in Redwood City. That's Thursday, October 20th at noon. It's a one-hour presentation. You can bring a sack lunch. If you'd like more information, the Law Library number is 650-363-4913, 650-363-4913. Now, for those of you who would like to say something about whether you're confused by Prop 57 or have some position that you would like my guest to respond to, I would urge you to call. Don't be bashful. This is really important. This, the whole purpose for doing this debate is to try to help all of us, especially lay people, understand what this is all about. And you've had views from those who are in favor, against it, in favor of it, against it, and Judge Hyman, who is in favor of the juvenile provisions, and yet here we have something that's positive in 57, but there are other aspects of it that obviously there is a debate about. So again, the toll-free number, 866-798-8255, is available to you. I hope that you will join us. For those of you who are going to be listening next week, I will not be doing the regular program because there is, of course, the third debate for the presidential campaign. However, I want to let you know, and by the way, they're not going to be here with me in the studio. I want to let you know, Steve Wagstaff thought maybe they would be, right?
They are going to be here.
All right.
From what I understand, they're calling in.
For those of you who are interested in and are aware of what we do on the fourth Wednesday of the month, on October 26th, we will be doing our usual monthly Call a Lawyer night. And you might want to join us for that. That's where you can talk to attorneys off the air, and that's 1-800-525-9917. That topic on October 26th will be a Federal Aviation Administration regulations involving drones, new ones, and I'll have Ed Page and Ron Rohde, who are pilots, and they'll be talking about what's going to go on with drones. So look out up in the air, for everybody. I guess people are not either interested in what we're talking about or maybe they're totally confused. Can either of you, Judge Hyman, Jeff Hayden, or Steve Wagstaff, lend any kind of help to people who are laypersons in terms of how should they approach this? Judge Hyman,
well,
please.
Again, I think that both of your guests have been fair in terms of articulating possibilities in terms of how the adult portion of this might be followed. But, you know, as a judge, we want certainty with respect to the law. We try to follow what the legislature has requested, whether we agree with it or not. Most of us respect the executive branch, of which the prosecutor is part of, in terms of deferring in most cases, in terms of how they wish to proceed. We are given a responsibility in terms of the possibility of reducing, if it's a felony, that can be reduced to a misdemeanor or with respect to a strike. But there are case law that lays out what we're able to do, how we do it, what we're required to say. The prosecutor has the right to appeal when we exercise discretion. The defendant can appeal our use of discretion or lack of exercise of discretion or in terms of what the prosecution does, and I think that's a healthier system when there's checks and balances and the allowance for all sides to appeal. But again, the adult part of this proposition, which is has administrative rulemaking parts. It isn't the parole board, which is a conservative organization. It's going to be set up with administrative rulemaking, which has the possibility for being liberal, conservative, or whatever. And while I share the concerns with respect to overcrowding, with respect to prisons, and with respect to the costs, I'm also very concerned about public safety. There are many dangerous people that we see on a daily basis that are involved in some very serious crime And we need to be careful about the premature release of these individuals, while also recognizing that there are some people that have taken responsibility and have improved themselves. One of the concerns that I have with respect to many of our prisons is that we don't have basic substance abuse counseling available in a lot of our facilities. We don't have literacy in a lot of our facilities. One of the things that has happened as a result of realignment is that a lot of people are getting rehabilitation at the county jail that weren't getting rehabilitation at state prison. So that's a good thing. But this, we're talking about release. I might feel more comfortable about it if parole was going to be beefed up and if these people were going to be really watched, and in the event that they didn't show up for a meeting, had positive drug tests, then they were going to be held accountable immediately. We don't know.
Yeah.
And that's a concern for me in terms of as a person who has dealt with criminals. And that part of the proposition really concerns me.
Let me take a call. Is that all right with the three of you? All right. Tim, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Yeah, I'd like to make a sort of general comment on this.
Certainly.
Not specifically on 55. I'm actually a criminal defense investigator. And when I hear people talking about the rights of victims and how nobody cares about the victims, I would like to point out that as a criminal defense investigator, I'm often the very first person to talk to the victims of the crime. That means that neither the DAs nor the police or any other part of the law enforcement apparatus has apparently bothered to talk to them since the crime happened. Now, that's often something that is helpful for me in helping our clients and our defendants, but it seems a little weird when the person who is investigating in favor of the client who is accused of the crime is the first person who actually listens to the victims. It happens time and time again. So when I hear about that, I often think it's more a matter of the district attorneys and the criminal justice system being more interested in getting a prosecution than actually helping the people who've been hurt.
Let me get some comments for you, Tim. Thank you very much for calling in. I think you'll have comments both from Jeff Hayden and I think from Steve Wagstaff. Turn your radio back up if you would. Again, for those of you who might have a question, a comment, a concern about what we're talking about, Prop 57 or the criminal justice system, certainly feel free to call. It's toll-free, 866-798-8255. You want to start, Jeff?
Sure. I think what Tim described, and I appreciate your comments, and it's been consistent with my experience in certain parts of the state and inconsistent in others, especially when you're dealing with very serious crimes. People get caught up in the elements, they get caught up with their investigation. They got caught up with a lot of different things, but maybe not so much talking with the people most affected and seeing what they want. It's true in homicide cases where you're talking with family members and find that no one else has bothered to ask them what they want. When you're talking with domestic violence where prosecutors are often distracted by the needs of getting their own case, it's as though they're on a mission and they don't necessarily take the time to ask the victims what they want and what they're trying to pursue. In other parts of the state, that's not the case. Particularly in more suburban counties, you have prosecutors that actually spend time talking to the victims, really getting their feedback in ways you don't in more urban counties. So I think what I would expect in many places, and I hate to overly generalize, but in bigger counties, Santa Clara, Los Angeles, Alameda, where you've got more urban areas and more intense criminal activity, that would be probably different than what we'd see in San Mateo or Marin or some of the other counties around. There is one thing I want to circle back just really quickly.
If you would.
One of the things we end with at the end of the last half hour is the presumption that if Prop 57 passes, people are going to be released. And as long as we stay below the mandate, there's no likelihood that anybody's going to be released.
Mandate? What are you talking about, the mandate?
The mandate from the three-judge panel, which said to bring prison population down.
Down from 180,000.
Right. Right now, we're below the threshold to where we wouldn't have to release anybody.
Okay,
and
go ahead.
What this does is it prefaces it from the very beginning. It's quite clear. We need to be in charge of who it is that gets released if we're under an order to be released. And as I read this, with the intention of the governor, And it's not just the governor. It's Governor Brown. It's Lieutenant Governor Newsom. It's even Newt Gingrich. I mean, it really has a large group of supporters. They're not all liberals. They're not all pro-defense. But point being, they want to have a framework in place. If we're under that gun again, we need to have a framework in place to make those determinations, and that's where this is going. And I don't anticipate anybody being released under the current state of affairs by this.
Let me just briefly do this. Support for KLW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you have a legal problem, you may need to talk to a lawyer. The San Francisco Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation in both San Francisco and Marin County. For a referral to a lawyer or the Bay Area Mediation Services of the San Francisco Bar, call 415-989-1616. That's 415-989-1616. If you're in San Mateo County, the San Mateo County Bar Association also has a lawyer referral service. You can call your own at 650-369-4149. 650-369-4149. Throughout the state of California, every county has a bar association and lawyer referral service that's available to you. And what you are confronted with, if you need some legal advice, they'll do their best to find someone who's experienced and set you up for an initial half an hour consultation. With minor exception, you'll pay somewhere between $25 to $35 for the half an hour, and that does not go to the attorney. It goes to the lawyer referral service for actually to keep the lawyer referral service going. Additional funding for your legal rights is also made possible by the Trust and Estate section of the State Bar of California, the California Applicants Attorneys Association, the Family Law section of the State Bar, the Labor and Employment Law section of the State Bar, and the San Mateo County Bar Association. And I thought I saw a light going on, and then it went off. So in any event, let me do this. Let me invite you to call in. We still have a few minutes. If you have some questions that you would like to pose to my guests, it doesn't have to necessarily be exclusively to Prop 57. If you have some questions about criminal law or the criminal justice system, please feel free to call in if you would like. It's toll-free 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. Steve, if I may, I'd like to come to you at this point in terms of Tim, who said he is a criminal defense investigator. What comments do you have for him in terms of how he sees his role, that I'm the first one to talk to the victim?
Well, I can't speak to what goes on in the town that he lives in, but if he wants to see how it's done, come to San Mateo County, because we do talk to our victims. My entire career has been devoted to victims. My office is strewn with pictures of victims that have been served. I have a victim services unit of 16 people, men and women who work every day doing nothing but trying to serve the victims in our county. And so if what he's encountered might be true in small theft cases, but when one's dealing with violent cases or where somebody is, we're there, and the police are there. I mean, a case doesn't get to us without the police talking to victims of a case. And so, I can't speak to his county and what he deals with. It may be more, but boy, not in our county.
Yeah.
I really respectfully dissent from that last comment. Steve, you and I are friends. I don't want to throw anything in your plate, you know, unnecessarily, but what you just said is quite contrary to my experience in certain arenas. We have domestic violence prosecutions at the misdemeanor level where frequently you have victims in the case who are the people who claim to have been battered, who don't want to testify, they don't want to see a prosecution, and your office seeks to hold them in contempt when they choose not to testify. Mm-hmm. That's a pretty significant departure from seeing what the victims want and really protecting their interests.
What do you say, Steve?
Jeff's correct in the sense of what we do. It has been the case since probably the late 90s. Now, we do have them held in contempt, but of course, under the law, they cannot be incarcerated. But we do have plenty of victims because what we know, if you talk to the people from CORA in our county.
CORA is what?
That's our domestic violence community service people, the community overcoming relationship abuse. They will tell you this is what needs to be done. Yeah. They are strong proponents of that. I was a young prosecutor when it was the other way. Victim says, I don't want it to go forward. We didn't go forward. We simply dismissed the case.
And the danger with not going forward is that it kind of gives an invitation to whoever is the abuser to go ahead.
In this field of domestic violence that Jeff's appropriately referring to, that is the no tolerance for the violence. We recognize that the woman is under, usually the woman, is under the strong influence of the abuser, and they go forward. It is the it is the practice throughout certainly California and most of the country, based on evidence-based approach to things and what one does to stop it. You know, hey, if they change the rules on that, my caseload would go down dramatically. Mm-hmm. But we're trying to protect women so they don't become further victims.
Mm-hmm. Well, all right, everybody. Here, we have a few minutes left if you'd like to call in. It's toll-free, 866-798-8255. And I hope that if you have a question with regard to our criminal justice system, whether it's related to the Proposition 57 on the November 8th ballot or something that you would like to pose to my guests, please feel free to do it. We still have a few minutes. Don't wait another 10 minutes or so, and we've got Ralph. Ralph, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much. The question is the intent. If the adult part was written so badly and the prosecutor and the lawyer can't agree on its merits, then who wrote it and what was their agenda for writing it in the way they did, so that we can't agree on changing this law?
Hey, you've been listening, Ralph.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jeff. Jeff Hayden wants to respond. Go ahead, Jeff.
Thank you, Ralph, and I appreciate the question. And I'm confident that Mr. Wagstaff and I will agree that start with the initiative and read there. The very beginning of it will tell you what it was about, and it's quite clear that the provisions are enacted to enhance public safety, improve rehabilitation, avoid the release of prisoners by federal court order. And that's the purpose of it.
Mm-hmm. But you have a prosecutor that's not agreeing.
No, I think if you ask him, and I'll give him a moment to respond as well, we don't disagree about the purpose of this initiative. We disagree about its effect.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a very skeletal provisions. I mean, if you open up the ballot pamphlet and look at Section 3, it's very, very short, and that's the only portion of it devoted to adult. And it states a constitutional amendment to establish a policy so that we step forward and decide who gets out and who doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't necessarily say we're going to start releasing people. And you asked about who drafted it. I can't answer who drafted it. It was put in by the governor.
What happens with a lot of these propositions is somebody has an agenda, and they push their agenda, and so you're being forced to either vote for it and hope that it works, the best way possible, or not voting for it and then vetoing it, and then you're left where you were.
Let me get some comments also for you, Ralph, from Steve Wagstaff. Turn your radio back up. Thank you very much for your critical approach, which I think is what I do like people to do who are listening to the program. Steve, what thoughts do you have for Ralph?
I think Ralph's on the mark.
Yeah.
I think Ralph, 100%. I certainly agree with Jeff that, you know, it sets forth these three principles, but I think there's only one, and I've been told that by the governor's office. It's really just to deal with the overcrowding problem.
Yeah.
I don't know how this in any fashion enhances public safety. It doesn't provide rehabilitative services. And there's no more parole officers come out of it. What it really does, and again, if it were done, if we could guarantee everything is going to be out in the public where victims and DAs can comment, it doesn't. And as was noted earlier by the judge when he gave his description of his feelings on it, I 100% agree with it. What it does is it says we're going to trust, and that's what Ralph was talking about. We're going to trust that it gets interpreted the right way. And, you know, the reality is that when you do things quickly, and it was the governor's staff that drafted this, and when you do things quickly and you don't invite input from prosecutors, defense attorneys, judicial groups on that line, and you do it in a matter of a couple of months, well, then you're going to end up with something like this that we are being asked as a public to trust us.
Is this, would you say, what's really behind this whole thing? Is it the monetary potential expense of our prisons having more people? Is that what's really moving this, would you say, Steve?
No, I think it's what Jeff said earlier. It's very simply that what the governor has said, which is, Right now, we're under the cap. But I want to have a system that will last past his 2 years he has remaining, that it can be, you know, that that a prison population. Mm-hmm. I'd feel a lot better if they said the original sentencing judges are the ones. We will take these cases back and let the judges who set the sentencing in the first place. Let's trust our judges. This takes it away from the judges and gives it to the bureaucracy. And we've never trusted state bureaucracy.
How do you like that one, Jeff?
I somewhat disagree. I don't have a problem with it going back to judges that look at it independently, but the judges that sentenced originally might be looking at it 10 or 15 years later and not really focusing on whether the person's rehabilitated, whether they're a danger to release as opposed to somebody else being released. Because let's be honest, this is put in place because somebody's going to be released. And the question is, what mechanism is in place to decide who gets released? And right now it's arbitrary in the sense that somebody that was sent up with certain things on their record may be put much further in line to who gets released than somebody who gets sent in a more, you know, in a more serious offense right now. And this is saying, no, we're focusing on a nonviolent current offense and using that as a baseline. All this other stuff can keep them in custody if they're the wrong person to get out. We have ample provisions for that. But if it is the right person, why should we focus on the past? You have somebody who's going to prison for something non-serious, and bringing him in front of a judge who 15 years earlier or 5 years earlier or 20 years earlier might have said, I'm sending this guy away, maybe unduly prejudiced by the case and hasn't really followed what this guy's done in the last few years. I have no problem with a judge being participating in the system, a judge being the one who makes the ultimate call, but it shouldn't go back to the original sentencing
court. We have a judge right here. Well, judge, what do you have to say?
It's not, number one, it's not realistic to send it back to the judge because the judge might be retired, number one. Number two, there's the problem of calendaring it and everything else. Also, we're talking about people that are doing more serious stuff. If they were doing less serious stuff under realignment, they might have received a prison sentence, but they're doing it at the county jail. Mm-hmm. So when we talk about someone nowadays who is doing a prison sentence in prison, we're talking about a different class of individual who's committed a crime of violence. So we're not talking about someone who is doing something minor, and it's going to be more difficult in terms of being able to demonstrate in terms of rehabilitation. You know, my biggest problem with this aspect of Prop 57 is the fact that it's going to be administratively set up without anyone really having a say about it. And the courts defer with respect to administrative rulemaking. So whatever is basically done is going to have great difficulty being found to be inappropriate by an appellate court. Mm-hmm. And that's a concern to me.
How about Jeff in terms of do you disagree with what Judge Hyman has to say here?
Well, Judge Hyman and I very seldom disagree. The only small portion of what he said where I disagree is these people may not be going to prison as opposed to county jail because of something they did that's more serious now. Mm-hmm. Many people are ineligible to be given that county jail sentence instead of a prison sentence because of something they did 10, 20, 30 years ago. Additionally, there are certain statutes where you would think that they would go to jail and they go to prison. Mm-hmm. There are some statutes that you would think they would serve the local time in, you know, the time in prison, and they actually serve it locally in jail just because of the drafting of the realignment. There are some holes in it, some things that perhaps could be corrected but have yet to be.
If you would clarify this for us, with respect to with realignment, we have people who have left state prisons and gone to county jail. Is that essentially correct under realignment?
That's correct.
All right. So if Prop 57 is passed, will that affect any of the people who are in county jails throughout the state of California?
As I read it, no.
No, it will not.
It's entirely...
It's all in state prison.
It's all in state prison.
Okay.
And there are people that are in prison because of a fairly minor offense, making them ineligible for realignment. Somebody who is a registered sex offender, that gets everybody paying attention, but it could be for a misdemeanor-level offense where that makes them ineligible for later stuff. Because they're a 290 registrant, they're probably not going to be able to get a county jail sentence. Even though what put them there is something that won't make it available to their neighbors, nobody's going to know about it, but perhaps it makes them ineligible for a prison sentence. You have people that may have committed a strikeable offense 15 years ago when they were a juvenile, things of that nature. But because they have that strike, they're going to serve their time in prison instead of jail. And it's the same sentence. They would, the ones in jail wouldn't be affected by this. The ones in prison might be.
Steve?
The problem with that is that judges retain the power. The balance that Judge Hyman was talking about. On that case of the person who had that strike as a juvenile and now has a new offense, if it's minor, our judges have the power to say, no, there's a balance to it. No, you're not going to go to prison. That belongs to the judge, and mm-hmm. that's the problem with it. Again, where I feel the problem with 57 is, we've been there. In the 1960s and 70s, that mm-hmm. was the system. Mm-hmm. We left it for a reason. Governor Brown signed the law to change it, and that was after we had defense attorneys, judges, and DAs working with the governor back then, worked on it hard to come up with a new system. We're going backwards here. This is a step back into the dark ages the wrong way.
Actually, what Steve just said about a judge striking this prior offense may be true and maybe not. They can strike a prior so that a person can get a probationary sentence. That part's true. We agree. But striking it to where they never had it, to where they would serve a prison sentence in county jail as opposed to actually going to prison, no, they don't have that power.
Let's take one very brief call. Donna, you have about 30 seconds if you'd like to try to be succinct.
Well, I was just wondering if they could speak a little bit about the higher criminalization rates of people of color.
Oh boy. Okay.
I realize we're at the end.
Yeah, that's probably a program all of its own. But
honestly,
thank you. Let me get some comments. Any brief comments we have? We actually have about a minute and a half left.
Well,
the program.
Clearly, yes, the research with respect to the juvenile part of this proposition, clearly the research with respect to direct files indicates statewide that there's a problem, disproportionate problem with respect to people of color, Latinos and blacks, African Americans are disproportionately direct filed upon as compared to Caucasians, Asians, and other ethnic groups in California. So there certainly is evidence in terms of that. There's even evidence that suggests that if the county prosecutor is a Democrat or a Republican, that affects outcomes in terms of the research. Now, you know, what does that mean? I don't know. But it's a real concern in terms of disproportionate. But that's true of the juvenile system in general.
Any other comments? We have half a minute.
Same thing is true in adult. And what's changed in this generation as opposed to a generation ago is that the sentences are longer. So more people are spending more time. Now, we've cut back on that in the last few years. But still, the amount of time that somebody spends in jail or in prison, the percentage of our population that's in jail or in prison is still at a very, very high point relative to any place in history, any place, any time.
I want to thank the three of you very much for joining us. This is
something, John,
that I hope we all read very carefully. I want to thank Steve Wagstaff, President of the California District Attorneys Association, District Attorney for San Mateo County, Jeff Hayden, Chair of the California Board of Legal Specialization, Specialist in Criminal Law, and, of course, California Superior Court Judge Eugene Hyman, retired. Thank you all very much for joining us. Your Legal Rights production staff members are program engineer Joanne Marr and production assistant Martin McClain. Funding for this segment of Your Legal Rights has been made possible by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. Its website is www.calbar.ca.gov, and go to the upper left of your computer and go to Legal Specialists, and you'll find out who the legal specialists are in your county in California. Additional funding for the program has been made possible by the National Board of Trial Advocacy, which also certifies four areas of the law. It also funds the public radio satellite transmission of the program for national distribution. So I hope you've gotten something out of this. If anything, please read your ballot arguments and try to educate yourself on that. Thank you very much for joining us on Your Legal Rights Public Radio, and please join us next time on your public radio station. And keep aware, and read. I'm Chuck Finney.